Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permits. Fuck.
I desperately want us to keep that in.
I sort of stumbled over the word permits. It's way too hot here to be doing any podcasting, but we are doing it anyway.
I'm so warm. I really resent that I've turned the fan off for audio purposes. You're welcome.
That is very
listeners.
Generous of you. I suppose fuck is a good way to describe the past week, actually. All things considered.
I've had a great time. Everybody has just had the BBC on. I've had a lovely time explaining the mechanisms of Parliament and who can, how we can get rid of a Prime Minister in, 2 days. Isn't that great? We can get rid of a Prime Minister just through peer pressure. It's fantastic.
I mean, by Australian standards, it's pretty slow, I would say. There's still work to be done.
I don't know. I feel like we're really trying to outdo the early 2010s Australians in the rate at which we go through prime ministers. But
yeah,
I think we're pretty close to what they had a prime minister once every 2 years for about half a decade, didn't they?
Something like that. I mean, I think the Australian system they have, there's a specific term for it which I can't remember what it is, but essentially
defenestration.
That's like the general term for throwing somebody out of office, and literally means throwing somebody out of a window.
Which I really enjoy. I just like the idea of grabbing Boris Johnson by the pants and launching him through a window. It's a great image.
Maybe we should make it part of the ceremonial ejection from office, that there's a window in Downing Street which prime ministers are hurled through by burly men.
Oh, I'm all for embarrassing those with power as much as possible.
Yeah.
So yes,
but I think in the Australian system, the governing party can literally, all the MPs go into a room and they have a vote, and then that's it. If you lose that vote, you're just out. And I think in the same period they can also elect the next leader as well, so it can be very, very abrupt. This is still the intro segment. Obviously, Boris Johnson has resigned as leader of the Conservative Party. He's still Prime Minister at the time of writing. And I guess we're going to be discussing whether
he's not writing anything, Jimmy. Don't make me write. This isn't GCSE English again, please.
It is not. At the time of recording, which is the 9th of July at 6:25.
Mm-hmm. A muggy Saturday.
Boris Johnson is still Prime Minister. It looks like he may be until the autumn, when his replacement is expected to be elected. But it might be sooner than that. So we're going to be discussing, I guess, the events of the past week, how it actually happened. We're going to be discussing what Boris Johnson's legacy is overall, who's going to be the next Tory leader. All of this fun stuff will follow after we play some music and tell you about the Patreon account.
I'm Jazza, and that's Jimmy.
They already know.
Do they? I don't know. All right, let's play that music.
If you've been enjoying listening to the Right Dishonourable podcast, you might be interested to know that there is a selection of bonus episodes available only for patrons. To access them, you just need to go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable, where you'll see all the sign-up details. Recent topics of conversation have included the preparations for the next general election, Jazz's favourite pronoun, and the plan to pardon men who are convicted of consensual homosexual activity. We'd also like to thank our existing patrons, Eternal Elf, Alexander Wood, Andrew Kilpatrick, David Preston, Jer Carney, Ilona Diomkina, John O, Marlene, Matt, Michael Costa, Nick Webb, Seb Kales, and Theo. So Jazzy, you say you enjoyed the last week. How would you rate it in terms of political weeks that you've been observing since you started taking an interest in politics?
It's pretty extraordinary. Even if we consider... No, it's pretty fucking extraordinary. I mean, even the Brexit referendum, I remember the votes coming in, and that itself was pretty extraordinary because it wasn't really what anybody expected. And so there was a lot of panic of people running around and being like, oh my God, this is real. And that was a big upheaval of political expectations and like a power in the hands of the political class that had been handed to the public, and the public went fuck you. Whereas this is, I mean, the word like Westminster psychodrama gets used, I think, too much. But this really was just kind of all of us on the sidelines watching the government rip itself apart with a prime minister that took a very long time to adhere to convention and to actually, shall we call it that?
A very polite way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, he tried his hardest not to leave. To the point where people were suggesting that he could do something quite extraordinary. There was part of me that almost expected him to call an election in order to just kind of like get that personal mandate that I think he wants. Boris Johnson has always kind of like, I think, treated himself like a presidential individual, but we don't have presidents in the UK. Nobody has that individual mandate. He has a mandate of 200,000 from the people of Uxbridge and Ruislip.
Yeah, people have made this point a lot, that we do have a parliamentary system and not a presidential one. But I do think, and that this has been conceded by a lot of people previously, so I don't think this view is that outlandish, is that in terms of how our media works and in terms of how people think about parties and how normal people choose who to choose which party to vote for and so on, It is much more of a hybrid system than a pure parliamentary system. So, like, which leader leads the Labour or the Tory party or the Lib Dems even, matters a lot in how people vote. So to say that he has no personal mandate and his only mandate is the, you know, voters of Uxbridge who picked him in his constituency, I think is wrong, to be honest with you.
But there's nothing... That's kind of like fuzzy feelings. Like, there's nothing that actually ties that down and says this is Boris Johnson's personal mandate. That's people's opinions. What actually happens is the 650 individual mini-elections that happen across the country. That really is all that matters. I of course, understand what you mean. And people vote for prime ministers all of the time, especially that is, I'm sure, apart from a number of fringe constituencies... For a swing seat, that is going to be kind of like the major thing that tips people over the edge, right? Whether or not they choose to vote one way or another, who is going to be the prime minister? And people are thinking about that when they go to the polls, rather than the nuances of a what are they called?
Policies?
Yeah.
Those things.
Case, yeah, those things that are just real small fry in politics.
Well, I can guarantee you some of the people who are, you know, attacking the concept of Boris Johnson having a mandate will have, when he became Prime Minister after he replaced Theresa May, have been demanding a general election because they'll have said, oh, Boris Johnson doesn't have any mandate. People voted for Theresa May and, you know, there needs to be a general election whenever a Prime Minister is replaced. There is definitely those people will exist. And in any kind of situation like this, people bend constitutional arguments to what the outcome they want, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look at that happening in Westminster, where basically Boris Johnson had to be told by everybody who knows him that he's a very naughty boy and should leave. And then finally he did. But shall we rewind a little bit? A lot of people have asked me, because very often I am the most politically obsessed friend, and so people...
I can believe that somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, literally a podcast and a YouTube channel that I build around being the political one. They've asked me, and I kind of think that there's obviously many things that have led to him needing to resign and the collapse of his support in his government and the wider Conservative Party. Broadly, I've been describing it as he has asked people to lie for him too many times. He's asked people to go to bat for him when the bat was made of jelly. And one too many times. And this thing with Pincher, the Pincher scandal, where he allegedly sexually assaulted a couple of young men in a club in London last week.
Well, he groped them specifically.
Yes.
He doesn't seem to be disputing that he did it, right?
I think it's still allegedly.
Right. But I'm
copying Laura Kunzberg here, and I think she probably knows more than we do.
Yeah, I'm sure. But he said in his resignation letter to Boris Johnson, as he resigned as Deputy Chief Whip, he said, you know, last night I drank too much. And there was kind of an implication that he had done something wrong, right?
I remember getting that alert and I was like, you got too drunk in the club? What does that mean? Like, what actually happened? And then obviously it's another Conservative MP being a sex pest.
Allegedly, obviously.
Allegedly being a sex pest.
There was, obviously the allegations are serious against him, but there was this amazing tweet by this guy called Fergus Craig, who I'm not sure what Fergus Craig does in real life, but it was fair play to Chris Pincher. I've had some big nights, but I've never drank so much that it brought down a government.
I really enjoyed it as well. But there was there's that scandal where basically Boris Johnson said, I didn't know anything about Chris Pincher's history, because he's had a history of and is apparently known as.
There's been multiple allegations made against him.
I was about to call him Hansy, and I really didn't want to call him Hansy.
Boris Johnson was asked in the liaison committee whether he'd ever used the phrase Hansy, and I would say the chances of Johnson having used that word are 100%.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't even know why you'd ask the question, to be honest, other than to get him to admit that he would say something like that, but it's obvious he would have used that word at some point.
So Boris Johnson got a load of people to go out and say that he never knew anything about Pincher, and then it came out that Boris Johnson had a nickname for him, Pincher by name, Pincher by nature, and then Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid resigned, and what I think is really interesting about their resignations and then the subsequent 50 plus resignations that happened in the space of 24 hours, 48 hours, something like that. Mm-hmm. 48 hours it must have been. It was all of the stuff that all of the critics of Boris Johnson and the government have been saying for years, of kind of like integrity, people need to trust us, doing the decent thing and all of that kind of stuff. And like questioning his morality, all of that was then coming from the people who have literally stood next to him in the lectern, sat next to him around the cabinet table.
So some of whom who will have backed him to become leader of the Tory party back in 2019 as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. But there was the Pincher scandal. There's Partygate. He's the first prime minister to have ever been found to have broken the law. I think if you zoom back, if you rewind far enough, it's the Owen Paterson scandal, right? Where he was found to have been taken, you're going to correct me here, to have been bribed.
I mean, I don't think anyone legally described it as a bribe, but it was a bribe. He was taking money from companies in order to lobby in their interests.
Yeah. And then Boris Johnson tried to change the rules to save his mate. And then ever since then, there have been similar things where Boris Johnson's judgment of character has been put into question and really damaged the government's image and his MPs by association. And so here we are. Turns out you can't be a twat and be prime minister. You can for a little bit, but after a while it wears thin.
It's not obvious if you described the Chris Pincher scandal amid all the other scandals like Partygate and, you know, Dominic Cummings and Bernard Castle. And I mean, there's loads you could list off over the last 3 years. It's not obvious that this would be the one that would topple him.
No, but it's the straw that broke the camel's back. And actually, I think Keir Starmer is often odd at Prime Minister's questions, doesn't necessarily like hit the nail on the head very much. But I think he did really, really well in the previous one, where he framed it as Boris Johnson enabled a known sexual harasser to have power, and who then went on to misuse that power. I thought that was really, really good framing of the consequences of what Boris Johnson had done by giving someone like Chris Pincher a job within the government, especially as a whip, where where they're basically the disciplinary, they have an awful lot of power internally in the party. They basically tell some of them are often like basically bullies to make sure that people toe the party line, all those kinds of things. But I was very impressed by Keir Starmer's attacks in PMQs that framed it like that, because I hadn't really heard anybody from media frame it in that way, because everyone was just bloody obsessed with all of the drama.
I mean, we both enjoyed the drama.
Right? I loved it. I've loved it so much. Does that make us bad? Like, because it is our government and our country's politics are in a really sorry state at the moment. We've got a prime minister that technically doesn't really have any, like, is just meant to be holding the fort until there's a new one.
That's not particularly unusual, though. Like, people have tried to say that he should go immediately because it in some way him staying is a break from precedent, and that is just straightforward. It is what usually happens.
It's not a break from precedent, but I do understand the argument that some people have made of the fact that previously, well, the last two times, maybe even three times, that there have been resignations by Conservative prime ministers, it has been around policy. So it's been around Brexit, being able to pass the Brexit deal with Theresa May, I guess John Major was like broadly competency and kind of like the way that he was approaching finances and stuff like that, if I understand it correctly. Boris Johnson is a bad person who should not be prime minister, seems to have been the conclusion that the Conservative Party has made over the past few days.
I mean, that's what people say, but I mean, in a sense, there have been some long-standing critics of Boris Johnson in the Tory party, and I don't think they're all necessarily culpable for this, but the majority of them have backed him throughout his premiership, you know, in decreasing numbers as time has gone on. And for them to say now that they've just realised that he is unfit for office is, I mean, it's not really acceptable, really, is it? I mean, it was obvious when he, all of his character flaws were obvious before he took the job.
But they saw him as a vehicle with which they could win elections.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's the
reality of it. And I mean, I did think when he took office that he actually would, in some fashion, get Brexit done and break that gridlock. And I think that was one thing, in a sense, that he had going for him when he became prime minister. But you know, if he didn't realise it when he became prime minister, it should have been obvious over the, you know, his management of COVID that all of these, and all the more recent scandals as well. There's nothing particularly special about the Chris Pincher scandal, I don't think.
No, I agree. That almost shows the gravity of it, because it is a really severe scandal.
Yeah, I mean,
and the buck stops at Boris Johnson, frankly. And the fact that that is not remarkable tells us a lot about kind of like what we've been through and what has been kind of like precedent and normal underneath his premiership.
Yeah. Do you think in some ways he'll be relieved once this is all over, or do you think that he will...
Boris Johnson?
Yeah, because that is something that I think he thinks
he'd be able to come back.
Do you think he will try to come back at some stage?
So his, when the quote is, when the herd moves, it moves. And it doesn't sound like there's an awful lot of remorse in that. It sounds like he thinks that he's just a victim of current events, my dear boy.
See, I actually, and, a lot and, of people...
And I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to come back and do it again.
A lot of people took issue with the Heard quote and the general tone of his resignation speech, which wasn't very remorseful, but I think the Heard quote is...
Or emotional. It didn't seem very emotional either.
Them's the breaks, as he puts
it.
But I actually think... I mean, that speech is very redolent of his overall attitude to politics, that it is a bit of a game, and you do sort of rise and fall with, you know, the bigger currents that are going on in politics. But I think that Heard quote is correct. Like, that is what happened to him, is that the Heard eventually moved against him. And for a long time, it didn't appear that it was going to, or that, you know... Because, I mean, he even, you know, he recently, within the last month, he won a confidence vote, didn't he?
Yeah. But, you know, he didn't win that... very well. When 40% of your MPs think that you're bad at your job and you shouldn't do it, that's not a resounding victory that you need in order to be able to govern effectively.
No, it wasn't a resounding victory, but it was a victory. The Tory Heard was still with him at that point, and it's only over the past couple of weeks that the Heard has moved against him, as it were. So it's... I mean, I can see why people, you know, dislike the speech and what he said, but I think there are a lot of accurate observations within that, I would say.
I think there is a case to be made for him to not stay on, or at least, and I think this is what's going to happen with the 1922 committee, which is the group of... They're the committee that kind of like represent backbench MPs, so Conservative MPs, well, Conservative backbench MPs, those who aren't in government. They have a election on Monday where they're going to elect a new committee who are then going to decide how this leadership election is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And there has been a lot of comments from around media that they're going to try and expedite it as much as possible, and even suggested that they're going to bypass the vote that goes to the Conservative Party members.
Do you think that's
a viable thing to do? Do you think they should be doing this as quickly as possible to get him out before the... Not necessarily before the summer break, because they have literally, I think, under 2 weeks in order to do that if they wanted to. But in order for them to maybe have kind of like a final two within the next few days.
I think if it was me organising it, I would take my time.
Which you are, surprise, Jimmy.
I'm too busy, man. Somebody else can do it. But I think I would take my time over it, really. I think the people who want to rush it are the people that have been driven slightly hysterical by Boris Johnson's tenure as leader. And from a narrow Tory party perspective, I think if they took more time over it, they would be more likely to choose a candidate that might be able to win the next general election, which is, you know, ultimately that is the point of the next leadership contest, right? Is to...
Which will have to happen. The next election has to happen by the end of 2024.
Yes, that's correct. There's previously been a sense that it would happen early in 2024 because people don't like, particularly campaigners, don't like winter elections or autumn elections.
Because it's cold.
Because it's cold. I mean, whether when the new leader comes in, they will agree with that logic, or whether they'll prefer to have a bit more time in order to change things.
It will depend on how long and deep our recession is, I feel, no?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I actually think the new leader would be advised to call a general election soon.
ASAP, yeah.
I mean, maybe not quite as soon as possible, but all of these living costs, energy bills and all the rest of it are only going to go up. And I think that's only going to hurt the governing party, which at this point is the Tories. So in some ways, I think they would be advised to do that. And I suppose in that sense, you could, you know, contrasting what I just said, you could argue for a quick leadership election in order to get somebody in place as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. But I think they should think carefully about who they appoint next.
Who do you think you are, the Queen, telling the Scottish people to think carefully about the independence referendum on 2014 or something?
That is all of the
Conservative members who are listening to this podcast. Jimmy thinks that you should think carefully about your decision.
I mean, in many ways. So we should talk about the candidates at this stage. So
at this point, at the time of writing, there's lots of speculation, but there are only five people. Wait, let me just check my phone for my alerts. Still only five people who have declared that they are running. Suella Braverman.
Yeah.
Lol.
What's wrong with Suella Braverman?
There's a list. Rishi Sunak. Some upstart. Tom Tugendhat.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Shapps. And Nadeem Zahawi.
And Kemi Badenoch. Have you...
Oh my god, so there are six. I forgot about Kemi Badenoch. See? Both Suella Braverman and Kemi Badenoch, I think, are equally terrible people, and so I'm really hoping that they don't win. But they're vying for government positions, aren't they? That's why they're doing it.
Possibly. So the reason you don't like them, I suppose, is that, Suella Braverman, it says here, has promised to get rid of all this woke rubbish, adding that there is a rights culture in the UK that has spun out of control. I'm reading this from The Guardian, I suppose I should say. And Kemi Badenoch has also made herself notable for saying that the racial inequality in the UK was not as bad as progressives claim it is.
Mm-hmm. She is a black woman.
She is. And Suella Braverman is of Asian heritage, I would guess.
You would guess. By skin tone. I'm actually not sure. She's married to a white guy.
Is that relevant?
Well, it's why her surname is Braverman. I think
that makes sense. Yeah, Indian origin. Mm-hmm. So I was right, Jazza. You know, despite your scorning of me.
Yeah,
I mean that
Tory women just seem to be the worst kind, don't they?
The worst kind of women or the worst kind of Tories?
I was just going to go with human.
Fair enough.
They seem to be the most extreme ones. Like, I'm thinking of Priti Patel and Liz Truss. Like, they're all bananas. Anyway, we only have six runners at the moment. Oh my god, and we still haven't got people who we know are almost definitely going to run. People like Jeremy Hunt, people like Liz Truss. I'd be really surprised if Dominic Raab didn't give it a go as well.
I think,
like, some of the big beasts in the
cabinet. Actually, Dominic Raab.
Raab? Really?
Yeah,
oh,
I think
okay.
So, yeah. I'm going to check that in the background.
But we already have six. And I feel like that's going to... at least double. Especially because I don't think Kemi Badenoch and people like Kemi Badenoch and Suella Braverman, I don't think are being taken very seriously. Apparently Penny Mordaunt is also going to run to throw in a crazy Tory... another crazy Tory lady. She seems less crazy. Like, I feel like I'd quite like her as an individual, but mainly because she's got a hot gay brother.
There's always another angle with you, Jazza.
I contain multitudes.
I mean, it says here that she's economically to the left of the Tory party, and she's also been a keen advocate of LGBT rights, so that she's quite different from the Suella Braverman, Kemi Badenoch. Pitch,
yes,
I would
say. Maybe I'm being.
She is an ardent Brexiteer, though, so maybe that's why you're getting crazy vibes from her.
Maybe her hair is also always perfect.
Presentation's important in politics, so I don't think that should be a mark against her.
Right, we have. are there any people that I
have missed out?
That I haven't mentioned that you think are probably going to run.
Have you mentioned Sajid Javid?
Oh, the Saj. I don't think he's going to run. I think he's going to back Rishi. Because they must have coordinated their resignation letters because they were released within about 15 minutes of one another.
You know what? I did read, I think it was it in the Times or the Guardian? They claim not to have coordinated their resignation letters, and I find this so unlikely.
What a load of boys. Come on.
Yeah, sources familiar with the matter, i.e., you know, their helpers and hangers-on claimed that they hadn't done so, and I think that is untrue, to be honest with you. So, you know, continuing in the Boris Johnson legacy in that respect. Yeah. I mean, essentially, so Rishi Sunak has the most declared backers at the moment, and he, I think it's fair to say that he's the favourite at this point. Interestingly, Ben Wallace, who's the Defence Secretary, appeared to be the favourite according to polling from the Conservative Home website, which suggested that the general Tory membership, so not the MPs, but your average party member, preferred him over every other candidate in head-to-head situations. But he said he won't run because he wants to continue doing Defence Secretary stuff. Which is interesting because it seemed like he'd actually have quite a good chance, assuming that it, you know, the vote is actually thrown over to the party members rather than kept among the MPs. But who? I mean, neither of us are Tories. Spoiler alert.
I was for a little while, but only for a video.
Only for the bants, basically. Who among the declared or probable candidates do you think that you would want to be our next Prime Minister?
Who would I want to be? Under what premise? I think would be the least terrible?
Or the best would be another synonym.
That's not a word I'm willing to use.
okay, who do you think would be the least worst Prime Minister by your standards?
Honestly, I'm just looking for someone who's going to be a vaguely decent human being.
Okay, well, I don't think we have anyone suitable here, I'm afraid.
No, but I think there are a couple. So I think somebody like Jeremy Hunt or Rishi, or even Rishi Sunak or Penny Mordaunt, like they're going to adhere to conventions and to the systems that are in place. I just don't want another Johnsonian who is going to come in and completely throw all conventions of British politics of the wind. I don't want somebody else to try and see how much the system is going to bend before it breaks, because it didn't break this time, but I don't want someone to bend it again.
I've seen Tom Tugendhat speak a couple of times.
I don't know enough about him to be completely honest. People talk about him a lot though.
He's a former soldier. I think he's got a reasonable line on defence. He's fairly bullish, as it were. I don't know much about him. I mean, it says here he's chair of the One Nation Caucus of Conservative MPs, so I guess he's a moderate in the Tory context.
Yeah, One Nationers are like Cameroons, right? Ish?
Yep.
Cameron was a One Nation Tory?
I think so, yeah. So I don't think...
And you know what? That wasn't bad when he was reined in by the Lib Dems.
Yeah,
no, it was lots of austerity.
Yeah, much as I'm a critic of woke rubbish, as Suella Braverman put it, I'm not sure it would be a particularly good idea having someone who fixates on that too much being in charge. Liz Truss is just obsessed with like Deliveroo and stuff. That's all I can remember about her.
What's interesting is people have said that this is whoever wins this, whoever's going to leave the Conservative Party at the moment, is going to be instrumental in shaping what conservatism looks like. Because post-Brexit, nobody really knows. Is it low tax, high spend? Is it low tax, low spend? Is it Deliveroo? Is it any other? Nobody really knows. And at least, you know what? At least Liz Truss has some kind of an idea of the fact that we're all going to be gig workers or something.
She's a realist, is that what you're saying? But,
yeah, maybe.
She's going to lead into the California libertarianism that we're all going to be living under.
I think that's her thing. And yeah. also she's quite popular with the Conservative membership as well. Like she does, she's apparently done a lot of work to sweeten that group of people, that group of like 100,000 people who are going to decide who the next prime minister is, in theory.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there seems to be, the Tories do seem to have fallen back slightly on their low taxes Thatcherite default, I would say, which, I mean, there is an argument that lowering some taxes can actually increase the tax take overall because, you know, it incentivizes economic activity, so you have more to spend on public services and so on. I don't really think that's how Conservatives think about reducing taxes. I think they just like the idea of reducing taxes, a lot of them, and having a small state. And I'm not, for all the people kind of, you know, people dislike Boris Johnson for legitimate reasons, it is kind of interesting how much the state ballooned under him. And a lot of that was prompted by COVID and Brexit, obviously. But I'm not particularly taken by that a small state is a good thing in and of itself. And I think there did seem to be some sort of expectation. I think this still exists among former Red Wall voters in the North that actually more should be spent on public services in order to level up the country, to use use Boris Johnson's phrase. There doesn't seem to be any candidate that is leading with that when it comes to the Tory leadership election. And that would probably be my preference.
Go on, you have to. You like Tugendhat?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to win though. it was sort of like when I liked Rory Stewart and I thought he would lose last time around.
Who do you think will win?
So I agree with you. I don't think Suella Braverman or Kemi Badenoch are that likely. I think
And can I just say, thank God.
I think Rishi Sunak is the favourite. I mean, the truism in Tory leadership elections is that the favourite never wins. I'm not entirely sure what this is based on.
Boris Johnson was the favourite.
And he won. That's very true.
And Theresa May was the favourite.
She was the favourite after Boris Johnson dropped out. I don't think she was the favourite when Boris Johnson was still in the running. So I would dispute that example.
Boris Johnson never ran.
What do you mean he never ran?
He did a speech and said, I'm not running.
That still counts as a dropout. He organised that press conference to announce his candidacy. So I think he
And
ran.
Then went, soz, no.
Yeah, I don't think you have to formally declare to be considered in the running. Because a lot of these people who are tipped, who haven't yet declared, are being tipped because they've been sounding out other Tory MPs to see how much backing they would have. So it's not based on pure hearsay, I don't think. I mean, there's a bit of me that you said the whoever gets elected is going to shape post-Brexit conservatism, and I think the likeliest scenario is that whoever gets elected leads the Tories into a general election defeat and is replaced.
I don't know. I think there are some people who could, if they can like sell a vision. Post-pandemic, post-Brexit, quote-unquote post-Brexit. I think if somebody can sell a vision, I think there is a chance.
I don't think it's the most likely scenario.
So here's who the New Statesman... actually are quickly becoming some of the best aggregators of polling in the UK. Good job, New Statesman. They have a tracker that shows who has the most declared backers. So Rishi Sunak is way ahead with 18. So I'd be really surprised if he didn't, if he wasn't in the top two of the... if he wasn't in the final two, in the final one off of this campaign.
Yeah, so, I mean, to go back to your question about what the leadership race will look like in terms of how the election works, I find it hard to believe they'll cut out the Tory party membership, because I think that is now an established thing, for better or worse, I think Tory party members would view it as outrageous if they were just cut out of the decision-making process. So I assume that it is going to follow roughly the same format, which is, I think initially you have to get the backing of 8 Tory MPs to sort of get into the first round. And then basically the candidates are whittled down. You have to meet a certain threshold in the first two rounds following that, I think. And then it's just whoever has the fewest votes from Tory MPs, this is all Tory MPs at this point, is eliminated until you get down to the two last candidates. I'm assuming the structure will look something like that. And so the final two candidates will be presented to the Tory membership at large. I would assume that's what they'll go with. And I agree with you. I think
and then like over the summer break, so over like the end of July and August, they'll go around the country doing the hustings.
Yeah, that would make sense, I think, because probably the plan will be to have a new leader in place by the time of the Tory party conference in the autumn, I would guess.
Which isn't until October, but in theory they would be able to do that by September. And just get Boris out. I don't want him there anymore. Thank you. Thank you, all of the Conservative people listening.
So who else on your tracker has significant backing at this stage? Sunak's out in front with 18, I think.
And then it's kind of like a bit of a chunky long tail. So Suella Braverman, can't say this, has 9. Penny Mordaunt has 7. Kemi Badenoch, 6. Liz Truss, who has yet to... Penny Mordaunt and Liz Truss, who have yet to announce. Liz Truss has 6. Tom Tugendhat, who has announced, only has 6. Nadeem Zahawi, who just announced, has 4. Jeremy Hunt has 2. Grant Shapps has 1. Is Grant Shapps just himself? No, it's Robert Courts from Whitney.
There you go. I mean, I think... I don't think Grant Shapps has much of a chance of ending up as prime minister, to be honest with you.
God, can you imagine?
He's quite a comical figure, partly because he used to run self-help courses under a different name, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, and he used to edit his own Wikipedia page is the main thing under a pseudonym that I remember about
him. To be fair, I think all of these Tory politicians have probably done that or had somebody do it for them.
Is that why nobody's made a big thing about it? Because they're all guilty of it.
Yes, I mean, of course they're guilty of it, you know, like anyone with a serious ego probably edits their own Wikipedia page. I mean, I agree with you. I think Sajid Javid will probably fall behind Rishi Sunak. That would make sense. Other than that, you know, I mean, Kemi Badenoch could fall behind Suella Braverman, I guess, because they seem to be running on a similar platform. Do we know, has Steve Baker announced that he's... No, Steve Baker's pulled out, hasn't he? And is backing...
Oh, you know more than me now.
Yeah, so it was... he's backing Suella Braverman. So Steve Baker is the hardline Brexiter who did a lot of the kind of machinations in the House of Commons in the run-up to the Brexit vote in order to secure favourable terms for the cause that he backed. And is a fundamentalist Christian, slightly strangely.
Oh, great, another one.
Yeah. Quite a rare thing in British politics, actually, to have a Christian who's particularly serious about it.
It's not the done thing, is it?
No, I mean, I'm fully supportive of that trend. I think Rishi Sunak, you know, it's really a question of who appears alongside Rishi Sunak, judging by, you know, who's declared, and Rishi Sunak has been preparing the ground for a leadership bid for quite a while at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, that video that came out, let me tell you a story.
Yeah, so the thing I found funny about his leadership campaign video is that he's sort of trading on his quote-unquote great backstory, but it's not actually his backstory, it's his family's backstory. Like, his backstory is that he grew up in a very comfortable middle-class home, and then made loads of money in finance and married an obscenely wealthy woman who he met in California while at Stanford, which is a shit backstory. let's be honest, like, as absolute rubbish. Whereas Sajid Javid's backstory and Nadeem Zahawi's backstory.
Yeah, Nadeem Zahawi's backstory is amazing. Like, he left Iraq at 10 with no English.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So he's an Iraqi Kurd who, yeah, as you said, fled when he was young and arrived in England with no English, and has also made an obscene amount of money, to be fair, mm-hmm. But has done it from much more difficult origins. And Sajid Javid, who I still think will fall behind Rishi Sunak, is the son of a bus driver.
Really? From he Bristol. Never mentions that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've no sense of who else is gonna, make it to the end point at this stage. But
I want to say that I think the final two are going to be Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss. But there is something about Liz Truss that I just don't believe. I just don't believe that she's going to be able to do it.
You don't believe she orders all the meals from Deliveroo.
Shut up. I don't believe that. I think she's such a bad communicator. And I think that has to factor in to whether or not you're going to be a good prime minister or not. And hopefully the members of parliament will, like, whittle her out.
She is quite popular among certain.
But she is very, very popular. And if she gets through to the final round, we'll be, like, one of the ones to beat. But I feel like the most moderate that we're going to get is a Rishi Sunak.
I think in many ways that is true. I mean, he's quite socially liberal in his views.
Likes Star Wars and Coke. A cola.
So I think before we wrap up, rather than continually speculating on the Tory leadership, which I'm sure we'll do in future episodes. Mm. So I think it's... I don't think, despite what we've been discussing previously, I think Boris Johnson will retire to a life of writing columns, the odd book, and making speeches for ludicrous amounts of money. I would expect that once he's actually out as Prime Minister, he'll resign as MP. I can't really see him hanging around the House of Commons for any length of time.
He's not got the sense of duty of...
He has no sense of
Theresa
duty.
Theresa May, has he?
But he has no sense of shame. I mean, his main legacy probably actually isn't the pandemic. I don't think it's bringing Britain out of the EU, getting Brexit done, in his phrase. Mm-hmm.
Do you, as a representative
of the 52%,
do you think that he got Brexit done? Has Brexit been done?
Yes, I think it has been done.
What about Northern Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, there is still ambiguity over Northern Ireland, but I think essentially he got Brexit done as much as it was going to get done. And I think there will be continual wrangling over Northern Ireland as time goes on. I think that situation in some ways is intractable, and there won't be a clear and definitive mm-hmm. answer to it.
So what you're saying is Brexit will never get done?
Not as regards the Northern Irish situation, I don't think. I mean, it's kind of a... it's kind of that, I forgot the name for this, but it's that paradox around God. If, like, you know, if God is all-knowing and all-loving, how can suffering exist? And you can only have two of those things.
What are you talking about?
I can't be asked to explain it, but... yeah, it's sort of, yeah, it's a Gordonian knot, which I'm sure is a, you know, a metaphor.
Yeah, I definitely get that reference as well.
I thought you went to private school, Jazz. Did you not learn anything?
Yeah, but it wasn't a posh private school.
Okay. I'm sorry about your shit private school.
Thanks.
He's only been in the job for 3 years, and depending on what time he's actually kicked
not
out
even.
Of office.
Yeah, not even. Wait, how long? Years.
I think two and a half. No, I think by the time he leaves, because he joined in July 2019... and then he won his election in December 2019.
Sure, I'm counting from the election, but you are right. So it's been almost exactly 3 years.
He'll have been in office over 3 years by the time this is all sorted out, I think. Because, despite Keir Starmer saying he should be removed immediately, I think it appears to... Things appear to have settled down, that he's just going to stay as caretaker until the Tories have sorted out a new leader. It's possible that he'll end up having served less time than Theresa May.
Or he I don't think so. She came into power August 2016 and left July 2019.
Oh, so he's probably already surpassed her then, or is on the verge of
doing so. I think so. It has just passed her. Yeah.
Do you, I mean, beyond the Brexit thing, which is obviously quite a major thing, but do you think he'll be particularly remembered in, I don't know, 30 years' time when people are looking back on the kind of prime ministers of the early 21st century? Do you think he'll be seen as a significant figure?
Yeah, but only for how outrageous his behaviour has been and how he pushed the system as far as it probably can go, I think. I think we are going to learn about him in textbooks. He's certainly achieved that, but we're not going to learn about him in a fond manner.
I think the only thing he'll be remembered for is Brexit, really.
No, it'll be the pandemic. He'll be the pandemic prime minister. Theresa May, I think her thing is the Brexit stuff. And then Boris Johnson just went, oh, let's just leave and not resolve the problems.
Yeah, you know, that is a fair summary of what he did. But he's more instrumental in having brought Brexit about than Theresa May because of his role campaigning for Vote Leave.
Yes.
So I think his career arc overall, which does include his time as Prime Minister, will be seen as more significant than Theresa May, actually. And in some ways, I think you could argue more significant than David Cameron. So of the last three Tory prime ministers, I think he's probably the most significant. But I think other than, you know, just because he's been in office so little time, I think he does run the risk of being forgotten, actually. I don't think he'll be seen.
I disagree. I think what has happened has been so extraordinary under his tenure. I think he will. I don't think he's going to be forgotten. He's at least achieved that.
I think a lot of this stuff about him pushing conventions and generally misbehaving, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that, and, you know, this kind of ties into the Trump comparisons, which still in many ways look ridiculous to me. But, you know, I think he's been flushed out by the system, and I think that, you know, ultimately people will kind of not forget about it, but I think it will be seen as kind of a curious time rather than, you know, one where British democracy was in genuine peril, put it that way.
Okay.
Very enigmatic response from Jazza there. Should we wrap this podcast up?
Yeah. You can find me on Jazza John. You can find me as Jazza John on all social media platforms, and you can find Jimmy at JDE Nichols on Twitter, and he's got a Substack or something.
I do have a Substack, yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jazza reads it every so often. You said you save up posts and then I binge them.
Yeah.
Is that a good way of consuming my content, would you say?
Yeah, I actually do think so.
Okay. Well, you can, you know, if you've never...
And then, like, a couple of weeks after you've posted it, I go, what the fuck are you saying? Like, I can sometimes get quite annoyed.
Well, there's quite a back catalogue of posts now, so if you want to go and binge, you can do so.
Yeah. That'll be my Sunday morning. Lovely.
Okay. Well, Jazz has got that to look forward to. I guess we should finish.
Toodly.
Bye-bye.